we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Now, it seems like just moments ago, it was Friday, and I was sitting in this chair anticipating a big weekend of sports. Here we are with a snap of the fingers, and we're on Monday of Thanksgiving week here in the U.S. And I'm thankful to be here today to tell you about what went on over an exciting weekend. We've got tennis highlights, NBA games that could have been playoff previews, a busy weekend in European soccer, and of course, the results of Saturday night's heavyweight bout between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. We've got big contributions on our Sunny Side of Sports team from Samson O'Malley, Prince Nesta, Craig Gabriel, and Gwen Uten. So let's get started with the first day of Thanksgiving week programming here on the Sunny Side of Sports. We check in with Samson, who leads off with the news of a major end-of-the-year award going to an African athlete. Welcome to the show, Samson.
Olympic marathon champion and world marathon record holder Eliud Kipchoge is the 2019 World Athletics Male Athlete of the Year. 35-year-old Eliud Kipchoge beat four other contestants to retain the award during the World Athletics Gala in Monaco on Saturday night. Kipchoge earlier in the year won the London Marathon in a course record of 2 hours, 2 minutes, 37 seconds before making history as the first man to run the marathon under 2 hours when he completed the Emirates 159 challenge in Vienna, Austria in 1 hour 59 minutes 40.2 seconds on October 12th this year.
I hope I inspired a lot of generation. It was about human family, and I trust that from today onwards everybody will be positive in life, and in general I'm really happy for making history.
From athletics to basketball, where the draw ceremony for the second round Elite 16 of the Basketball African League 2020 qualifying tournament was held at a house of basketball in the Ivorian capital city of Abidjan this past weekend. The 16 teams were divided into two groups of G and F of 8 teams each, and games will be played in Yaoundé, Cameroon, and Kigali in Rwanda. Group games will take place in Yaoundé from November 26th to December the 1st, while Group H will take place in Kigali from December 17th to December the 22nd, 2019. The top two teams from each group will advance to the semifinals, where the teams that finish in the first three places will qualify for the Basketball African League regular season in March 2020. In golf news, the Gary Player Invitational, the world's leading charity golf series, which currently stages 6 annual events in the UAE, USA, China, Japan, UK, and South Africa, has helped the Player Foundation raise more than $64 million for impoverished children around the world. The South African leg of the 2019 Gary Player Invitational, which ended this weekend at Sun City in Rustenburg, South Africa, was the event's 20th anniversary. Xander Lombard and his team, including Irish pop star Brian McFadden, were this year's tournament winners. Some of those who took part in this year's tournament in South Africa recount their experiences.
We need to make the sacrifices, and for me, giving back to the community and to upcoming golfers, I mean, I'll do it over and over and over again.
The amount of kids' lives that he's changing in South Africa, in the UAE, in London, in the USA, and how he's continually got that spirit of giving is absolutely phenomenal.
I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. I'm Dan Friedel, sitting in the big chair for Sonny Young through Wednesday's show. Now, on Friday, we heard from the new manager of Tottenham Hotspur, the mercurial and always controversial man from Portugal. That's Jose Mourinho, who made his return to the Premier League sidelines after about a year working as an analyst. We'll hear how Jose did in just a moment, but first off, our friend Prince Nesta gets us up to date on what happened in the rest of England's top league. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Dan. Liverpool beat Crystal Palace 2-1.
thanks to goals from Senegalese speedster Sadio Mane and Brazilian forward Roberto Firmino. The win keeps the Reds top of the table and ahead of Leicester City, who beat Brighton 2-0 to secure their fifth successive victory, thanks to goals from Ayoze Perez and Jamie Vardy. Premier League champions Manchester City also got back to winning ways by coming from behind to beat in-form Chelsea 2-1 at the Etihad Stadium. The Blues went behind to N'Golo Kante's first half goal, but hit back with goals from Kevin De Bruyne and Algerian playmaker Riyad Mahrez. Arsenal and Southampton drew 2-2 at the Emirates Stadium. Alexandre Lacazette's double saved the Gunners after Southampton took the lead twice, thanks to goals from Danny Ings and James Ward-Prowse. The Gunners are 8th in the Premier League table, 8 points adrift of a top 4 Champions League qualifying spot.
Now, Princeton, following the news over the weekend, I saw that our man Mourinho guided the Spurs to a win in his first time out.
Yes, that's right, Dan. The special one made a winning start to life as Tottenham manager, as his new team beat West Ham 3-2 for its first away victory in the Premier League in more than 10 months. Son Heung-min, Lucas Moura and Harry Kane scored in a 13-minute span around halftime at the Olympic Stadium, with Tottenham having a spark to its play rarely seen in the final months of Mauricio Pochettino's reign. West Ham pulled goals back through substitute Mikael Antonio and Italian footballer of Nigerian descent Angelo Ogbonna in the 6th and final minutes of injury time. Manchester United's slow start to the season continued as they drew 3-3 against Sheffield United at Bramall Lane. Goals from three academy products, Brendan Williams, Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford, saw United claw their way back from 2-2 to go in front, but a last-gasp equaliser by Oliver McBurnie forced a stalemate. Things don't get easier for Manchester United as they next face Aston Villa, Tottenham and Manchester City in their next three league games.
Prince, here I am in the U.S. just trying to stay afloat with all that's going on in the NBA and the NFL and even college football. Now, don't get me started on college basketball. I can't believe that season is up and running already. So help me get up to date on the news from the top soccer leagues in France and Spain.
Plenty of updates, Dan. First half goals from Mauro Icardi and Angel Di Maria ensured PSG secured a 2-0 win over Lille. Both teams will feature in the UEFA Champions League action in midweek, with PSG visiting Real Madrid on Tuesday and Lille hosting Ajax on Wednesday. Lyon edged past Nice 2-1 despite playing 56 minutes with 10 men. Jeff Adelaide gave Lyon a 10th-minute lead with a low finish from the edge of the area before French striker of Malian descent Moussa Dembélé slotted in his 10th league goal of the season from the penalty spot. Dario Benedetto and Nemanja Radonjic scored late goals as Olympique Marseille ground out a 2-0 win over Toulouse. And in Spain, goals from Luis Suarez and Arturo Vidal ensured Barcelona came from behind to beat bottom of the table Leganés 2-1 in La Liga. Barcelona hosts Borussia Dortmund in the UEFA Champions League on Wednesday before traveling to Atletico Madrid in La Liga next Sunday. Karim Benzema, Federico Valverde and Luka Modric recorded their names on the score sheet as Real Madrid secured a 3-1 win over Real Sociedad at the Santiago Bernabéu.
Now, Prince, as I mentioned at the top of the show, those of us here in the U.S. will be celebrating the National Thanksgiving holiday on Thursday. We'll go around the table before the meal and talk about what we're thankful for. So, in the spirit of Thanksgiving week, I want to know which soccer story you're most thankful for this year. What's your pick, Prince?
I'm actually spoiled for choice, Dan, but I actually choose to celebrate three African players who were also recently included in CAF's 30-man shortlist for the 2019 African Player of the Year Award. They include Mo Salah, Sadio Mane, and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. It's also worth noting that the three were also joint top scorer in the Premier League last season with 22 goals each. You know, sometimes I keep on wondering how the Premier League would look like without them. Their contribution to world football cannot be underrated. I also choose to applaud the likes and contributions of Manchester City and Algerian forward Riyad Mahrez and English forward of Nigerian descent Tammy Abraham, who's already scored 10 goals for Chelsea this season. Keep on flying the flag for Africa and keep on making us proud. I'm Prince Nesta. On the sunny side of sports. Back to you, Dan.
Thanks, Prince. And here on the sunny side of sports, we're thankful for your contributions. I hope you have a great holiday out west. Now, in addition to Prince's analysis of the big soccer stories over the weekend, I wanted to bring you a taste of what Jose Mourinho thought of his first time out on the Spurs sideline. He said he thought the game wasn't as close as the 3-2 final score made it seem.
I think if somebody didn't watch the game and just know the results, I think that was very, very difficult for us to win. But I think the feeling is that we were closer to the 4-0 than West Ham was to the 3-1. But this is Premier League. And their first goal changed things a little bit.
Mourinho is known for exuding lots of confidence. Some might say it's arrogance as he patrols the sideline. He was asked if he felt nervous at all before his debut with the Spurs.
So today the feeling is I was where I belong. That's my natural habitat. Was I extra emotional? No. Was I nervous before the game? No. But I just love it. And especially when things go in your direction, of course, is the best thing in football is to win matches.
As we mentioned, Mourinho and Tottenham have to get right back out there on Tuesday for their Champions League match as they host Olympiakos of Greece. We'll let you know how that game went on Wednesday's show. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now, sticking with sports in Europe, our friend Craig Gabriel has this report on the Davis Cup finals between Canada and Spain in Madrid. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Spain has won the Davis Cup for the sixth time and the first time since 2011. The point that sealed the final was won by Rafa Nadal as the home nation took an unassailable 2-0 lead over Canada, who had played so incredibly well to reach the final for the first time. This was a final of emotions for Roberto Bautista Agut, who returned to the Spanish team after rushing home to his father earlier in the week, who sadly passed away, and he never got to see the result. But for Roberto, his father's spirit was no doubt with him as he played the first rubber against Felix Auger-Aliassime, who had been sidelined with injury at the start of the event. Bautista Agut won 7-6-6-3 and looked skyward when the last point was done. Nadal then took on Denis Shapovalov, who played so incredibly well. Nadal won the first set, and many thought the Spaniard would roll through. But Shapovalov stood his ground. He even had a set point before Nadal clinched victory on match point three, as Shapovalov sent a forehand into the net as he went for a return down the line, Nadal collapsing on his back with euphoria. This was the first Davis Cup under the controversial new format, where 18 teams assembled to play round robin, and then it was elimination from the quarterfinals. The organization was marred by atrocious scheduling, and apart from when Spain played, often attendance and atmosphere were wanting. Organizers say they will look into these aspects, but for now, Spain winning has given them a perfect start to this new format. Craig Gabriel for VOA Sports, Madrid.
Thank you, Craig. As you mentioned, Rafa Nadal had the clinching point. Let's hear what the Spanish superstar had to say after winning the cup in front of the home crowd.
Well, it had been amazing the whole week. Of course, when you finally win the title after all the things that we went through during this week, and playing at home is something difficult to describe. No, it's an amazing feeling, and especially share this great moment with all the people that supported us during the whole week, is just unforgettable.
That's Spain's Rafa Nadal on helping his country secure the Davis Cup title on Sunday. Keeping with international sports here this Monday on the Sunny Side of Sports, we need to update you on the news coming out from the World Anti-Doping Association as we head into 2020, which is, of course, an Olympic year. Russia continues to be in hot water, and the possibility exists that the country may be banned from the Tokyo Games next year. The Associated Press's Mike Rossia has this report.
I'm Mike Rossia reporting Russia could be barred from the 2020 Summer Olympics. The World Anti-Doping Agency's Compliance and Review Committee recommends that Russia be declared non-compliant for tampering with data. If the recommendation is accepted by the agency's executive committee next month, Russia could be barred from the Tokyo Olympic Games next summer. Before Russia hosted the 2014 Winter Games in Sochi, Russian officials were caught in a scheme to substitute urine samples taken from their athletes after competition with clean samples stored from earlier. The International Olympic Committee banned Russia as a country from the 2018 Winter Games. But 168 Russian athletes were allowed to compete under the banner Olympic Athlete from Russia.
So, Mike, for that update on an important story we're sure to follow in 2020. Heading back to sports on American soil, we spent some time last week previewing the heavyweight bout between Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. My colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with this update on the prescient Deontay Wilder. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. Well, Deontay Wilder may not have predicted the round, but he has consistently predicted the outcome, as he did at weigh-in the day before the fight.
You know, as a champion, you want to see your opponent look good and look in shape. So when it comes Saturday night, I won't have no mercy on him when I'm ready to do what I do. We know it's coming, but we don't know when it's coming. When it comes, bam, baby, good night.
Good night, Luis Ortiz, the still undefeated WBC heavyweight champion, delivered a single knockout punch in the seventh round. And if you blinked, you missed it. Saturday's fight was reminiscent of Wilder's 2018 bout against Ortiz, when Wilder took a heavy beating before defeating Ortiz by technical knockout in the 10th round. The popular opinion leading up to Saturday's fight was that Wilder was taking an unnecessary chance by agreeing to a rematch against such a dangerous opponent. And things weren't looking good for Wilder early on, with the one-sided fight leaning in Ortiz's favor. But Wilder later said he was merely taking measurements in those first six rounds. And 2 minutes into the seventh round, Wilder took his shot. One straight right hand sent Ortiz to the mat. And although he was able to rise from his knees in the 10 count, the ref waved off the fight and Wilder retained his heavyweight title. Wilder's next fight, scheduled for February 2020, will be another rematch against the also undefeated Tyson Fury. Fury took to Twitter after Wilder's victory, writing, "Wilder has nothing more than a puncher's chance versus me. I'm going to school even more than the first fight." However, Luis Ortiz has issued a warning of his own, saying he believes Fury will suffer the same fate as him in his upcoming rematch against Deontay Wilder. Stay tuned, sports fans. And that is all from me. Dan, I'll hand it back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. It'll be interesting to see how the heavyweight division shakes out in 2020. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports. It's time for some NBA news, and wow, what a big weekend it was. The Associated Press helps us get up to speed on two key games in the association. That doesn't even include Friday night's game between the Lakers and the Oklahoma City Thunder that came down to the wire, with the Lakers winning by 3. We'll start off with Sunday's game between the Nuggets and the Suns. Bruce Morton of the AP has this report.
The Nuggets asserted themselves in the fourth quarter to turn back Phoenix 116-104. Paul Millsap was game high with 23 points as Denver took control against a Suns team playing for the fifth time in 7 nights.
I think that was a point of emphasis, you know, knowing they played 5 and 7 and coming off a back-to-back that we can run them. and hopefully, you know, get them out of the game, and that's what happened.
Malik Beasley's three-pointer with 5:11 left capped a 13-4 run, good for a 104-93 lead, and the deal was done. The Northwest Division leading Nuggets have won five straight, while the Suns have dropped 4 of 5. Bruce Morton, Denver.
Thanks, Bruce. Also on Sunday, we saw the European connection of Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis in the battle for Texas between Dallas and Houston. Adam Spillane has this update.
Luka Doncic scored 41 points as the Dallas Mavericks won their fifth straight game with a 137-123 win over the Houston Rockets. Dallas scored the game's first 7 points and led 45-29 after the first quarter. Doncic says his team's quick start was the key.
We get two layups to start a game, and that just that I think that hypes us up, and you know, we gotta start every game like this.
Tim Hardaway Jr. scored 31 points for the Mavs, while Kristaps Porzingis added 23 points and 13 rebounds. James Harden led the Rockets with 32 points, but shot just 2 of 15 from behind the three-point line. Russell Westbrook scored 27, while Clint Capella added 21 points and 22 rebounds. Adam Spillane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. So continuing our basketball conversation, I wanted to whet your palate for a chat I'll have for you the remainder of this week with documentary photographer Bill Bamberger. He's got an exhibit called Hoops that's been on display recently at the National Building Museum here in Washington, D.C. So Bamberger is an instructor at Duke University. I kicked off the conversation by asking him what it's like to be a University of North Carolina grad teaching at Duke.
I think it's great to be a part of two of the most remarkable programs in the history of college basketball. And I was in school at UNC as a Morehead King scholar, a plug from my former fellowship program, which is remarkable, and also as a basketball fan. I wasn't enrolled as a fan, but I became one, and that was the era of Dean Smith, really one of the legendary coaches. And what was so remarkable about Dean Smith as a coach is that it was not about winning. It was about developing a team, a constituency of players who worked together, who put the greater good ahead of their individual accolades, and who had values that were larger than sports, larger than winning, but part of sports. And, of course, he was one of the winningest coaches in the history of the country, and we've had many legendary players. So I am a big UNC fan. How could you not be? I mean, I think there's something wrong with someone who goes to a school like UNC and switches allegiances at any point. That said, fast forward to my time at the Center for Documentary Studies, where I teach, and where I have had the pleasure and privilege of teaching some of the varsity basketball players, some of the real stars from Duke. And, you know, I would say this, you know, what kind of loser professor doesn't support his students? So when the Duke teams play, of course, and especially when some of my students are on the court, of course I pull for them. And so it's been difficult because the rivalry is so intense. And, you know, you're bred to dislike, to hate, to root against the opposition. When I came over to Duke many years ago for teaching, you know, it was a tough transition. But I've got to say there are more similarities than differences in the two programs. You know, of course, we know Coach K as well. People would argue one of the greatest coaches, the most winningest coach in the history of NCAA basketball, and also someone who runs a program with high standards.
That's Bill Bamberger, an instructor of documentary photography at Duke University. He's got an exhibit here in Washington, D.C. called Hoops, where he takes a look at basketball courts from around the world. We'll have more with Bill throughout this week here on the Sunny Side of Sports, and would be remiss if I didn't mention a couple of key games coming up tonight in the NBA. We've got the 76ers and Raptors in potential Eastern Conference playoff preview, and a Western Eastern matchup between the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the Utah Jazz. Looking forward to that on tomorrow's show. That wraps up the November 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger and VOA engineer John Dryden. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, South Sudan's president and chief rebel leader postponed the formation of a unity government for another 100 days. Inside the political turmoil in South Sudan, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
This is Science in a Minute.
From humans and animals to insects and microorganisms, Earth is just teeming with life. Even if the environment is incredibly acidic, salty, or toxic, with sub-zero or scorching hot temperatures, researchers have been able to find and identify living creatures. It's difficult to name any place on our planet where you can't find some form of life. But there are spots where even the hardiest of organisms can't survive. French and Spanish researchers have recently released a paper that identified and confirmed there is absolutely no microbial life in the hot, salty, hyperacidic ponds located in the Dellal geothermal field in Ethiopia. The researchers say the daily temperatures there, even in the winter, can exceed 45 degrees Celsius, and the area is filled with a number of hypersaline and hyperacidic pools with pH values that are in the negative range. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.